This is episode Delta of the Software Freedom Law Show. It's hard to believe we're at episode Delta.
Yeah, Delta. That's right.
Delta. Which always makes me think of Delta, Delta, Delta.
Oh, the Saturday Night Live skit. Yeah.
But, well,
we reference more Saturday Live skits here, given that you don't really watch Saturday Live.
No, I don't.
We reference a lot more than you should.
I think we reference Star Trek even more.
That could be true. I didn't mean to reference Star Trek a couple weeks back, by the way. It was an accident.
Oh, with the narrow jacket?
Yeah. The thing I realized that I was thinking of is I was thinking of a satin baseball jacket.
Oh.
Which is referenced in a Dead Kennedys song as the kind of thing producers and MTV types wear.
That's hilarious.
And that's what I was thinking of.
And
but
now,
then my mind went to the Beatles.
All I can think of now is Con!
But the thing, the reason I jumped to Narrow Jacket was not Con, it was the Beatles.
It was the Beatles.
From Sgt. Pepper's. And so then I thought, because producer Dan, good old producer Dan, he's into music, so I jumped to the Beatles, and then I thought of Narrow Jackets, and that's why I said it. That's why, and he's from Liverpool.
And he is, but he might be, I don't know, we'll have to
So
get,
he's a
we'll
guy into
from
music
him.
From, into, from
we'll,
Liverpool.
We'll ask him how he feels about the Beatles and try to include it in our show notes.
I'm sure he'd love, I'm sure, I mean.
I don't know, the one music-obsessed person I knew from Liverpool really did not like the Beatles.
Well, a lot of people have issues with the early Beatles, but not the...
Not the late Beatles.
Yeah, that's generally the case, I thought. But we will research producer Dan's Beatles interest, and we'll get back in the show notes at some later date.
Exactly.
And now we'll get back on track. Because we're not a music podcast.
Well, I was going to say...
Because I don't like music.
I love music.
Well, but we're not... It doesn't matter... Because we're not a music podcast, we are a free software legal issues podcast.
No, but someday we might do some music free software.
There's only one free software music. It's the free software song sung by Richard Stallman. Do you really want us to talk about that?
No, but the production and playing of music, the enjoyment and production of music using free and open source software would be an interesting podcast.
Producer Dan is a bit of an expert on
Maybe
that stuff.
Maybe he'll be our guest.
That's true, but we're not doing that today.
No, today we have a first.
Yes, so one of our first, you know, we're early enough still, even though we're you know, getting into approaching the double digits. If we weren't using Hex, we would be in the double digits of podcast numbers. We had not yet had any of our clients of SFLC on to talk about what our clients do.
And, you know, I can't promise that we'll have a lot of our clients on,
but we have a couple more coming up.
We do, actually. We do have one.
We won't give it away, because you were saying on Identica that you want surprise, or one of us wants surprise. We're not sure which one.
Well, I wouldn't mind. Well, I realized that what I was saying is that I like having teasers. It doesn't necessarily need to be saying...
This is not the last client of SFLC to be on this podcast.
Exactly.
But today you already know. Today you already know, because you saw it on when you downloaded this podcast.
That, or you saw it on Identica.
Or a variety of other places. Yes, it was the day we recorded it, went back and forth on Identica that it was happening with the person doing it, which is Stormy Peters, who is storming.
There's no suspense.
On Identica. And she is the executive director of the GNOME Foundation. And as I mentioned in the interview, I've known Stormy since she and I were on the GNOME advisory board together, and she's been involved with GNOME for a very long time. Both from the corporate side and now from the nonprofit side.
And I actually got to know Stormy when we were both participating in the startup of Foss Bazaar.
Yep, and then we both saw her a couple episodes back. We were out at the Linux Collaboration Summit, where we had a dinner with some of the GNOME folks, specifically Stormy and Dave Neary. And we invited her to come on to talk about, first of all, some of the research she had done in figuring out how to explain different types of nonprofit structures. Which we found very helpful in one of our previous shows, and we were going to ask her about that and ask her generally about the GNOME project, which I'm actually, you know, excited about the GNOME project, even though I hate GUIs.
And I'm just excited about the GNOME project.
Yeah, because you like these things. You
like
to click on things and use a mouse. I mean, if I never have to use a mouse again in my life, I would be pretty happy, you know. So I have everything keyboard mapped and all that sort of thing. But I think GNOME's a neat project, and I'm looking forward to our interview here with Stormy Peters, Executive Director of the GNOME Foundation. I have an exciting guest today here for our podcast.
It's Stormy Peters, who's executive director of the Gnome Foundation. Hi, Stormy.
Hi, Bradley. Thanks for inviting me. I'm excited about this.
We are too. It's really great. You and I have worked together before on the Gnome Advisory Board years ago, and now you're the executive director of the Gnome Foundation. So. Why don't you, actually, one thing we wanted to start out with was we were first inspired to invite you on because you made a really excellent blog post about the sort of comparing and contrasting the 501c3 nonprofits and the 501c6 nonprofits.
Which is great because we get questions about that all the time, and there actually isn't that much good information out there just on blogs for people to find easily.
Right, and we were putting together show notes for a show a while ago, and we found that your webpage on that was the best resource out there for it. So we're wondering if you could sort of give our listeners a summary of what you talked about on there and give them the information that you discovered in your research.
Yeah, well, I find the best blog posts come out of something where you don't know the answer until you go research it, and you don't find any good answer until you end up doing lots more research and writing it up. And those always end up being the best blog posts. So I didn't know what the difference was either, which is why I was looking for the information. I think when people talk about nonprofits, they assume all nonprofits have kind of the same structure. You can give them money, and you can deduct it from your taxes, and nonprofits aren't about making money, and they do good for the world. And I think that's about as far as most people get. But when I went and looked into it, it turns out there's actually 28 kinds of 501c3s, and 501c3 is the label the government has given this category of organizations that are nonprofits. And the two that are of primary interest to the open source software world is 501c3 and 501c6. As an example, the Gnome Foundation is a 501c3. The Software Freedom Law Center is also a 501c3. And I should point out that Gnome is actually a client of the Software Freedom Law Center. So nonprofits can also work together in different ways. And then the other main kind of 501c that is relevant to open source software in particular is the 501c6, and the Linux Foundation is a good example of that.
Mm-hmm. And 501c6, for our listeners, are primarily trade associations, and what that means is they have a mutual business interest. And while it's a nonprofit organization, what holds that nonprofit together is that there's a common business interest that's promoted.
Right, and so they're usually companies that come together, and you can't you can give them money, but it's not tax deductible. So, like, if you gave the Linux Foundation money, it wouldn't be tax deductible. But if you were a company, like one of their members, like Oracle or Sun, you could give them money, and it would be a business expense.
Right, so it might be deductible for a company as a business expense. So I think when people say deductible, I think you're right. I think it's confusing. Mm-hmm. And I think some people think it just means that off your personal taxes, you can take it as a charitable donation. But there are different kinds of deductibility.
Right.
And one of them is business expense for companies and for, you know, self-employed people and things like that. And the other is taxable donations for charities.
Right, which is the Schedule A when people file the IRS filings of their own versus Schedule C, for example.
Wow, that's
Because I follow both schedules, so I just happen to know that from my personal experience. And I'm not a tax
really
accountant, and I cannot give any tax accounting advice. But I'm speaking just from my personal experience as a U.S. taxpayer. So now that I've given that disclaimer, actually, Gnome Foundation is in the 501c3 variety, right?
Yeah, and I was going to say, I think the main difference between the two is that a 501c3, like the Gnome Foundation, its benefit. Its mission is to benefit the public. So like in Gnome's case, we're trying to create a free desktop that's accessible to everybody, regardless of finances or disabilities. And a 501c6, its main interest isn't the public. It actually is created to benefit those member companies.
Mm-hmm.
So in the 501c3 case, Gnome has members. All the contributors to Gnome can be members of the Gnome Foundation, but we're all working for the benefit of the greater public. And so I think that's really the key difference. And then a lot of things that are different about them kind of fall out of that. You know, the tax deduction aspect, the political lobbying. So as a 501c3, the Gnome Foundation isn't allowed to do much political lobbying, whereas a 501c6 is allowed to do any kind of political lobbying that's related to their member interests. And often I believe 501c6s are created to be lobby-type groups. Lobbyist, yeah. I guess is the word.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but one of the interesting things, and I think it's a good example with your organization, is that just because you're a 501c3, you can still work with companies. And I think in how we originally met on the advisory board of the GNOME Foundation, I think it'd be useful for our listeners to hear a little bit about how you and the GNOME Foundation have the advisory board and how you work with both companies and the general public to try and sort of build the best free software desktop you can.
Yeah, so 501c3s are to benefit the public, but many companies are also interested in working on things that benefit the public because a lot of their customers are in the public or because the founders of the company or the owners of the company want to do good. In GNOME's case, we actually have a product that is good for the public, a free desktop accessible to all, and we also have a product that's useful to companies. Red Hat, Novell, IBM all use GNOME or GNOME technologies in their products. And so what we did is we created an advisory board. Our actual board of directors is elected by GNOME members, so GNOME contributors every year. But we wanted to make sure that we heard the companies that were using our products and distributing them to customers and that we had some kind of channel of communication with them. So we set up the advisory board. We have 20 companies right now that are members of the advisory board, and they all sponsor GNOME activities at different levels. They all give us $10,000 a year, just general funds to help keep the GNOME Foundation going. And then they also contribute to things like Hackfest or conferences or events throughout the year. So most of our funding comes from corporations, even though we're a 501c3.
And I think that's actually quite typical. It's not always the case because sometimes 501c3s are funded by individuals and the public who sign up for membership programs. Mm-hmm. And I think the FSF is a good example of that. Mm-hmm. But I think it's really interesting to use an advisory board as a sort of as a fundraising strategy, but also as a way of keeping in touch with, mm-hmm. with companies and taking their input.
Yeah, they're usually, so in the case of GNOME, we often don't have any tie to our customers directly. We're not able to talk to them directly because mm-hmm. it gets distributed as part of Linux. So our advisory board members help give us feedback on what the end customers are asking for. But going back to the fundraising part of that, so at the moment the GNOME Foundation gets most of its money from companies, but we're actively trying to change that. For example, the Free Software Foundation, and Bradley can speak to this better than I can, but I believe they get most of their funding from individuals, from the public, through a membership program where they pay $100, $120 a year. And we've created a Friends of GNOME to try to do that same thing. Because I think if we're supported by the general public, we'll actually have more freedom. We won't have to go back and justify the changes we want to make in terms of something that makes sense for companies. Right now, our interests are very aligned, and we hope they continue to be aligned. But it would be nice to be supported by the people that support our mission and the general public.
Yeah, I certainly want to echo that. I mean, I'm not at the FSF anymore. I hadn't been there for many years, but I know that was a big thing for us when I was there, and it continues to be important for FSF in ongoing basis. And I think, generally speaking, I'd really love to see more individuals supporting the nonprofits that we care about in the open source and free software world. And actually, Stormy and I were talking at a conference recently that we really to have a campaign to encourage people to give take $200 a year out of your budget and pick two of the nonprofits and whichever ones you like the best. There's SFLC, there's FSF, there's GNOME Foundation, there's SBI, there's list and list more. We'll put a larger list on the show notes, but I think that people ought to think really hard about contributing to take 200 and give 100 a year to each, and I hope some of them will of course pick the Friends of GNOME program to help you guys out.
Thanks. I think it's important to look at, because often when people donate money, a lot of times a lot of people do it through their company, and their company will have a list of nonprofits you can support, and they'll deduct it from your paycheck. Often the free software groups aren't on that list because they're just not big enough to make those big company radar. Mm-hmm. But if people thought of them when they were giving their charitable giving for the year, that they could give to open source software projects in a way that enables them to do things that they can't do just with volunteer time all the time. So it's one of the GNOME Foundation, the GNOME Project exists because we have hundreds of people that give a lot of time and effort to the project. And often it gets to the point where you say, well, I've given all my time, I gave my vacation time to go to Guadix, I can't give any more. But sometimes their physical efforts could be enhanced by adding a little bit of money, because a little bit of money enables maybe that team member who can't afford to fly to Guadix but is really crucial to the team and you need to meet with them, that little bit of money might help buy their ticket. And if 10 people chipped in, you know, you get everybody in the team there.
Yeah, and I'd add to that, too, that not everybody can contribute to every project. You know, I mean, I contribute to a lot of free software projects, but everybody around here and all the listeners know I am not a graphical interface person. But on the other side, I see the real importance of having a free desktop, and I see the GNOME project is really important in that. So from my point of view, I think I'm going to declare now that I plan to sign up today, hopefully, or within a week, to the Friends at GNOME program, because I have no way of coding, because I hate GUI programming so much. I can't give that to GNOME, but I can give a little bit of my rather meager nonprofit salary to GNOME because I care about it.
Right, either you have time or you have money.
Yeah, exactly.
And so while we have only so many hours to give,
And there's a lot of people who make a lot of benefit in their careers out of free software, mm-hmm. But they work on, you know, custom configurations and system administration or things mm-hmm. like that. You know, giving back is a really important thing, and I think, I mean, I'm glad we're starting this conversation now, and I hope it continues in the community. The giving back is really important, especially at a time like this when companies are tightening their belts and there's fewer donations going around from the corporate space, and having being supported by individuals not only helps the organizations, but it helps the organizations have a constituency, which I think is really important, because it allows, you know, people like Stormy, I won't put words in your mouth, but to be able to say to companies that we have a constituency that's also a donor base, that's the public and people who care about GNOME.
It definitely gives a much stronger general push towards being able to promote the public interest. Now, I mean, that's true even if you have companies donating. I don't want to mislead anyone. And actually, the IRS has all sorts of tests to make sure mm-hmm. that not all the money for a nonprofit is coming just from one company. And that can be quite involved. But the truth of the matter is, at the end of the day, if you can say, even if the bulk of the money that you get came from companies, if you can say we had, you know, X many, we had 1,000 people give $20 or give $100. It looks really good, and it helps the organization to focus its mission.
Yeah, it looks good, and it encourages more contributions, and it also adds a lot of stability. I mean, I would much rather have, you know, 100 people giving $100 a year than have one company giving that same amount of money. I would like to have both, but the 100 people is much more stable because next year the company might not, you know, might have changed its direction or might not have the budget for it, whereas it's unlikely that all 100 of those people can't give anymore.
Right, because anytime a company gives donations, it's usually only a few people making the decision, whereas when you start aggregating people together, it's a much more crowdsourced, to use a popular phrase these days, than it would be in the other case.
Right.
We've talked a lot about sort of meta issues about nonprofits, which of course is very fitting for our podcast, because that's a lot of what we do is talk about the legal and organizational structures. But I don't want to let an opportunity go by having you on without hearing more about what GNOME's plans are, what you're doing. So why don't you just sort of tell us about what's going on with GNOME right now and what you guys are doing?
Yeah. So right now I think GNOME's doing two new exciting things. Not quite so new, but the two main efforts. One is GNOME 3.0. So we're really looking at what should the interface of the future look like, what should the desktop of the future look like. And it centers around a couple of themes, but there's things like should we change how we do document management? Do people really take the time now to put it in the folder where it's supposed to go and keep this hierarchy of folders, or do we give them things like search and tags and other ways to find what they're looking for? There's also the whole idea of a lot of people are using a lot of web apps, and how can we make the desktop experience enhance their web application experience? So how do those things interact? So right now is when GNOME 3.0 planning is happening, and the community is actively discussing it. The release team is working on it. They're figuring out where the holes are. They're figuring out what things we would like to take the opportunity to get rid of, things that haven't been used in a while. And all that's going on, and we're trying to make sure that the companies that distribute our products, the companies on the advisory board and others, that they get involved in that process, so pulling them into those conversations. And it's an interesting experience for me, having lived in both worlds a little bit, but trying to bring them together, because companies are much more, they're used to a roadmap decided by their product marketing team, so their customers need this, this, and this, and this is when it's going to go in, and here's the team that's going to work on it, whereas in the open source software world, it's much more dynamic and up for grabs what's going to be, and it depends on, you have to convince the people that are writing the code that that's the best thing to do. And I think in the end it ends up in a better product. But we're trying to merge those two worlds enough to get everybody's input. The other big thing we're working on is GNOME Mobile. So I'm sure everybody knows there's kind of netbook phase. Lots of people are carrying around these little tiny laptops, or they have their smartphones that are almost like computers. And there's GNOME technologies both in a lot of the netbooks and in a lot of the smartphones. And what we're trying to do is make sure that the user experience in that space is a good one. So when you open a netbook, what are your expectations for that netbook that are different than a laptop? Do you expect it to come on more quickly? Do you expect, you know, full screen mode all the time because you don't have enough screen real estate to have extra menus and everything around. So I would say that the GNOME 3.0 and GNOME Mobile are two big things going on right now.
So I'm curious to ask, you know, the it seems like such a being pulled in two directions kind of scenario for GNOME, because you have the Ubuntus and the Fedoras of the world that are seeking, and I'm leaving other distributions out, which shows my personal distribution bias and really nothing else there. But all of those desktop guys who write who build the desktop environments for the general purpose computers, they want a certain interface, and they probably want a lot of rich interfaces and, you know, things like Tomboy and those sort of really interactive applications that take up a lot. And then you have the mobile guys who are trying to get it smaller, fitted into smaller devices and so forth. You know, how are you guys planning out the balance of those two, both in the political side of the companies talking to each other and the code side? I'm interested in actually both parts of that.
Yeah, so actually GNOME took an unusual approach. I think it's an unusual approach of saying that we want all the desktop applications to work in the mobile space. The reason we started GNOME Mobile is we didn't think it made sense to create a whole new tool set for mobile devices, whether it's netbooks or smartphones, but we wanted to use the technologies we already had. So we're working very much on improving the desktop technologies in order to enable them on netbooks, and we believe that makes the desktop experience better, because if you're dealing with netbooks that have, you know, much smaller processors and less memory, if you can make it work well on there, it's going to work really well on your desktop. And if you can make it really easy to find an application on your netbook when you can't really open up all the windows and, you know, have three windows open, if we can make it work well on the netbook, it'll make the desktop that much. So we're really taking the approach of we want one code base and one product, and we're not forking them or creating two separate ones.
Yeah, I certainly like to hear that, because being somebody who doesn't like bloated GUIs, the idea that it sounds like the ultimate goal is elegance, and if you shoot for that elegance to make the mobile look well, it just makes the desktop nice, clean, and elegant kind of way of and look and feel.
Right, and if you hang out with the GNOME community, the word you hear a lot is beautiful. and I think there's that aspect of elegance and beautiful. They want it to work, do what it's supposed to do, work very simply, look nice.
So if folks want to get involved, and you know, there's so much that's sort of opinion based. I know that you've in the past done been involved with sort of census type and collecting opinions from various sources. Are you doing any of that in respect to some of these things that you're working on with GNOME?
So I would encourage anyone and everyone to get involved. And like most open source software projects, there's lots of different ways to contribute, and I think some of them get overlooked. So obviously, if you can write code, you can contribute, and I think it's easy for most developers to figure out how to join an open source software project. But even if you're not a developer, we need people on the usability list, so people helping to make sure that GNOME is usable in all these formats. We need people on the marketing list. We really need marketing people. We have a lot of developers who want to help with marketing, but we could use people that have a marketing background. Not because we're trying to sell GNOME, but because we're trying to communicate messages to the general public, to our users, companies, and we really need people on that team. We need people that can translate. We need people that can write documentation. So we need all sorts of people. And by all means, you know, search for the GNOME and the thing that you want to help with and just introduce yourself on the right mailing list.
Yeah, I think one thing you missed in there that's been a recent discussion inside the Gnome community is you could use system administrator volunteers as well.
Yes, absolutely. We can always use system administrator volunteers.
So is there anything else exciting or anything interesting you want to add about the Gnome project? We want to make sure we cover everything we can hear about it that you want to tell us.
I think I covered the highlights. There's always a lot going on, and to be honest, as the executive director of a project like Gnome, it's often really difficult to keep up with all the different projects and what's going on. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying my best to get really good at finding the right person and making introductions.
Yeah, well, I mean that's sort of the center of how mm-hmm. open source and free software works is building your relationships and communities. So in some sense, the executive director is the ultimate community builder in an organization like that.
Yeah, and I think one of the good benefits of having an executive director is, especially for people not really familiar with open source software, it gives them a person to call or email and say, "Hey, I'm interested. Where do I go?" And without that I won't say figurehead, but without that person, they just have no idea where to go to even ask for help on where to go.
Yeah, and I'm sorry. And Gnome is such a big project. Also, having someone to really steer the advisory committee and to keep all of that going must be incredibly important.
Most of our advisory companies are involved in the Gnome community, which is great, and that's what we want. And as we bring people in, part of my role is to help them introduce different people in their company to the right people in the community to work with.
And I guess one last thing we'll make sure to ask you about is you guys have GWADEC, your GNOME European Users and Developers Conference coming up, right?
We do. I should have mentioned that. That's pretty big. We have several events every year. We have a big one in the States that's called Boston Summit. We have a big one in Europe that's called GWADEC, and it's probably our main conference of the year. And we started last year an event in Asia called Gnome Asia. It was in China last year, and it'll probably be in India this year because our community is worldwide, and so we really try to help them get their, help the community meet in various places to kind of foster the work worldwide. But GWADEC this year, one of the exciting things about it is that we're going to actually be co-locating it with the KDE group. Their conference is called Academy. So it will really be an opportunity this year for all the projects that are involved in the desktop, not just GNOME or KDE, but all of, X, the desktop.org folks, all of them to get together in one place because we've actively been working on collaborating, cooperating with KDE to make sure that we have common APIs or common infrastructure where it makes sense for the people trying to use our technologies.
Wow, talk about a big community organizing and creating task. I don't envy you in that task given the difficulties of the history. It's really great to see that happening, but I'm sure it's daunting to try to get all those people in the rooms together and talk through things.
Well, I have to say I've been interested in conferences and the purpose that conferences serve lately, having been to a lot of them in the last couple months. and my favorite ones are the ones that are run by volunteers. And GWADEC and Academy have both traditionally been run by volunteers. About a year ahead of time, people put in their submissions and say, my local university will host us, or I have this place here, and here's the team that I've recruited to help me. And the whole conference from start to finish is run by a team of volunteers, and it's just amazing.
Well, I'm certainly excited to hear about all these new things that GNOME's doing, even though I'm not a GUI guy. So I'm sure the GUI people must be really excited.
You may not be a GUI guy, but you still have to interface with your technology.
You haven't seen my desktop, have you, Stormy? I do have a GNOME panel. That's the most of GNOME I run, basically to get the time and weather. So I'm pretty hardcore. But we're all GNOME users here at SFLC.
Some of us more than
me,
others.
Except for me. I guess Eben's not either. That's true. But yeah. Everybody else is, I think.
I think everyone else is.
So we're. We're a GNOME shop and certainly enjoy the software and I really appreciate that you had time to give us to talk about both the nonprofit general meta stuff and to hear more about GNOME as well.
Thank you very much, Stormy.
Yeah, thanks, Karen. Thanks, Bradley. It was fun.
Great talking to you. Wow, it was really great hearing from Stormy. I was particularly excited to hear about the, I mean, I knew about it, but it's great to hear again about the cooperation between GNOME and KDE.
Yeah, you're not kidding, because I remember the days at conferences way back when, like in the late 90s, when Miguel would get up to speak, and then the KDE guys would heckle him, and then the KDE guys would get up, and Miguel would heckle. It was bad scene, man. Bad scene.
Yeah, it harkens back to some of the other podcasts we've had where, you know, we encourage cooperation amongst our different communities.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough to do. I mean, the BSD, mm-hmm. the BSD kernel Linux divide is still a mm-hmm. wide gap. But to say, you know, if KDE and GNOME can get together,
if they can get along,
right? Exactly. It's funny. People don't know this a lot. There's this old thing that I guess I shouldn't bring this up because it's. But I will anyway. there was this old thing about how KDE was just 6 months ahead of GNOME. That was because Miguel started GNOME 6 months after KDE started. Mm-hmm. And so his argument was that, you know, 6 months doesn't make that much of a difference. We're 6 months, why should people... And the KDE guys used to say, well, you should pick KDE because it's more advanced, because it's further along, because it's 6 months further along. And now that we're like 11 years out, it's funny to think that, like... Miguel was kind of right about that, 6 months don't make much difference 11 years later.
Right, but we're all going to be better off from the cooperation.
Yeah, exactly. So we won't argue. And now, this argument's going to go spawn again, right? But now that it's spawned, but now 6 months don't matter anymore. It doesn't matter who was born first. It doesn't matter. Let's get along.
Well, I really can't wait to hear how Guadec goes this year.
Yeah, yeah. It's good and co-locating with Academy, how do you
Academy,
say?
Academy, yeah.
The main reason I don't use KDE is because I hate GUIs. But the second reason I don't use KDE is I never had
right,
how
you're
to pronounce.
GUI agnostic, right? You hate them all.
Voila. Voila. So, but the one problem that I have is that knowing when I have to pronounce a hard K and put a hard K in front of words. And
that's all. A lot of people have that problem with GNOME, too.
What?
What's wrong
with GNOME?
A lot of people say GNOME.
But that's the little thing you put on your lawn, not the software project.
Anyway.
You put a GNOME on your lawn. You put GNOME on your desktop. It's very simple. Or, I guess in some cases, you have a GNOME selling you travel advice or whatever it is.
And you have GNOME.
The GNOME, but that has an E in it, so that's different. The guy who sells the little travel advisory stuff on the TV, you know, the garden gnome.
Oh, you're thinking about Travelocity.
Travelocity,
I've not seen
yeah.
any of those commercials because I don't really watch
yes,
TV.
Yes, they have a talking gnome.
But they do have the gnome on them. Which
is totally, you know, that gnome?
On their website.
You know why they did that campaign? It's totally based on the movie Amelie.
Well, except that Amelie came out of another... we're going to now have podcast notes all about... pictures of gnomes traveling, because I'd seen that before Amelie.
Okay, so that was a tradition people had that mm-hmm. then was in the movie, but that was really what popularized it, because then people
I guess
saw
so.
It. I never heard of it before, and I think probably a lot of people never heard it before.
A friend of mine did that in college.
Oh, it took a gnome, a garden gnome?
In the mid-90s, yeah.
But it's so big.
I don't think
it's
it was his idea,
thing.
Although I thought it was and was very impressed.
You know, it's funny because my free software developer friend, Loic Dacherie, I've talked about before on the podcast, he used to do this with a stuffed duck. So maybe it's a French thing. I'll have to ask Luke about that.
Or there's that that kid's cutout, flat something, which shows that I don't have any kids. Like Flat Harry or something like that. I don't remember what it is, but...
You take it to place and take pictures?
Yeah. And so, like, if you're a kid and you've got an uncle that lives somewhere else, you might send this cutout of a little person to that. So when I lived in London, a lot of people would be sent that by their younger relatives. Totally unrelated to.
Well, the whole point about this was
this
that
podcast.
GNOME and GNOME are different. Because GNOME is all this stuff we've been talking about. And GNOME is the great desktop environment that we've heard about from Stormy today. And hopefully we'll have more clients on as guests in the future. We have some plans. Mm-hmm. And I hope people will enjoy it in the coming weeks.
Send your questions to podcast@softwarefreedom.org and see you next time. The Software Freedom Law Show is produced by Dan Lynch of HalfBakedMedia.com. Thanks to Mike Tarantino for our theme music. This show is released under the terms of the Creative Commons Attribution No Derivative Works 3.0 United States license. Flat Stanley.
Whatever, dude.